And good morning. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show. Getting a lot of help this morning from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Denny. Well, I guess we know we're in Minnesota, don't we, with this weather?
Yes, and it seemed like it's, now, let's face it, we've had it pretty easy up till now. I mean, pretty easy.
Oh, yes, very easy.
But the door has slammed shut rather loudly. And it's, in fact, we're steadily dropping now. Of course, this time of the morning, we usually do this time of year. Five above now. We're going to be probably seven below overnight tonight, and we're only going to get up to like two below tomorrow. And a listener sent a text, and I have the same question. I think a lot of people do, too. Given the temperature and so little snow cover, are we going to see a lot of damage, do you think, to our perennials?
Well, we might. I wish we had a bit more snow cover. I thought it was going to happen with this recent snowstorm that went through, but it didn't. You know, it did not. I think a lot of the Twin Cities still doesn't have very much snow cover. Snow is our poor man's mulch, and so we do rely on it to protect and insulate things. It's, snow is a good insulator, and without it, yes, the risk is there. Now, the temperatures, although they are uncomfortable, that's for sure, they're not as bad as they could be. I mean, if it was going to be 20 below air temperatures without any snow cover, then I think we'd see more damage. But as long as we stay above 10 below, I'm hopeful things won't be too bad.
Remember you and I having this discussion a few years ago, and I was thinking about my, not just mine, but other folks calling in, texting in about boxwoods and other, boy, I remember they took a beating a few years ago because of that very thing.
Yes, they did. And boxwood is one of our more marginal broadleafed evergreens. So planting it on the north side of your house or where it does have some protection from winter sun and the worst of conditions, usually on the south and the west sides of our home. So if you have marginal plants like boxwoods, giving them additional protection like the north side is helpful. But yes, and then last year the rabbits got into my boxwood.
Really?
Little hedge. Yes, and normally boxwood is pretty offensive to wildlife eating it. It is a strong odor to humans, and we don't usually think of wildlife eating boxwoods, but I think it just provided the perfect habitat. It was a cozy little spot. It was protected. We had enough snow that the rabbits found a way to get in. They could completely hide under the snow. They had a perfect little house down there, and then decided, well, why not just eat what we can reach close by? And they ate a lot of my boxwood, yes.
We always get questions about those critters, too, among others, and no doubt we'll probably have more today. Speaking of which, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, we'd love to hear from you either by phone or by text. Just one number to remember, 651-461-9226. Call it in, text it in, whichever is easier for you, 651-461-9226. Another text in this morning, Mary. My Christmas cactus has not bloomed yet this year. It looks pretty healthy, though. What's going on?
Yes, Christmas cactus set their blooms according to the temperature or the day length. So short days, which we do have now if we didn't turn on our lights in our houses, short days will induce flowering, and cool temperatures in the 50s also induce flowering. So you've got to provide those conditions for a month or 6 weeks in order for the buds to set. And if you do that, regardless of the month it is, it can flower year-round if it has those conditions. So if you have a cool room with good light where you can put it and don't turn the lights on, that might be the easiest thing. Now, Julie just did a video that's up on the website on repotting a Christmas cactus. So you can see that at the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. I watched the video video, and now I'm trying to remember where's that link. We'll find that link and tell people. But Christmas cactus, the one that she actually repotted, was an old heirloom plant. And it had, the person's mother, their grandmother, their great grandmother had this cactus, and then it was repotted. Julie and one of the staff at the Arboretum did that. The cactus looked terrible. I will just say this, the cactus looked like it was really on its last leg, but it did need repotted. And so I think with that step, it will get better. But Christmas cactus can be very long-lived plants.
That sounds like fun, generation yes. after generation. Speaking of the website, extension.umn.edu, that must be, and I don't have any facts in front of me, but Mary, that has to be one of the best extension websites. And I know it's very popular. You guys get a lot of hits on that.
Yes, it is. I know there have been years when that was the number one hit or the most used portion of the extension website was the gardening part of it and people looking for information, because not only can you find plant information, you can find insect information. What bug is this? What insect is this? And also, what weed is this? So plant identification in general, it's great. And there are more and more videos, and there's timely information depending on the time of the year. You know, this time of year, you might think, well, what am I gonna look up about gardening? Well, you're going to look up houseplants. If you have a poinsettia in your house, did you get an amaryllis? How are you going to take care of those plants? Seed catalogs are starting to come in your house. Did you get an amaryllis? How are you going to take care of those plants? Seed catalogs are starting to come in the mail. So you're planting your vegetables. You're thinking about what vegetables have done well in Minnesota. So the Master Gardener Program has lots of information on that. So it's a local resource for Minnesotans to really hone in on what will grow best and do best in our rigorous climate.
What I've used it for, Mary, among other things, is if I was interested in planting a tree, which we all should be interested in, it's got some great pictures and ideas. It's a great resource for finding a tree to plant.
Yes, it is. And unfortunately, lots of us are losing trees because of, excuse me, the emerald ash borer. And if you've got any ash on your property, yes, you have to think about what replacement trees should I put in, what tree can I put in now so that it will grow by the time you have to take out your ash. It's unfortunate, but I think a lot of people will lose their ash trees. We might find some that are resistant, as we did with the elm trees. And we still have a lot of elms around, and we have great elms for replacements now. But diversity is good, and yes, the website extension.umn.edu has lots of information on plant selection.
Mary, I was wondering if we were going to get any questions about dormant seeding grass seed. And this Dexter said, can I still throw down grass seed to mix with the snow? Is that a good idea?
You know, it's really taking a risk. The idea is that you get the seed in contact with the soil. And then if it snows, the snow just helps to keep it in place. But if you do this reverse, you've got the snow first and then you've got the seed, it's a big risk. It's essentially throwing caution, you know, to the wind. So I would not recommend it unless you can see quite a bit of soil there. Dormant seeding is a good idea. I did it just on the property in between my house and the neighbors this year. It is a good idea, but if you can't get contact with the soil, it's a big risk.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Mary, we're taking a quick break here, inviting our listeners to join in. Any lawn or garden question, we'd love to hear from you at 651-461-9226. You can phone it in or you can text it in. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, it's 5 above zero. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, inviting listeners' texts or calls. Lawn and garden type for this morning, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, 651-461-9226. Backing up a little bit, Mary, Julie, I know Julie's video you were mentioning to me off air on that Christmas cactus. That was on Channel 11, Care 11, wasn't it?
Right, and the Arboretum person she worked with was Ricky Garza, so you saw Ricky actually repot that cactus. So, yes, you're right. It's not going to be on the website. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, Care 11, you can check it out with those good folks.
Right.
Again, our phone number happens to also be our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, I planted asparagus. And this previous summer, I read where I should cut back the leafy fronds when they turn brown and then place mulch on them. With the warm weather, they never turn brown. I did cut them off when they were green and then did put on mulch. Will I have lost the asparagus by having cut them back too early, is the question.
I think it depends on when you cut them back. Actually, you don't have to worry about cutting them back. And if you cut them back when they're brown, that's okay. But they will die naturally. The tops will die naturally. As long as they're green, they're producing carbohydrates and food for the plant. So cutting them off when they're green could have damaged them, but hopefully not. If it was the end of the year, like October, September, something like that, I doubt if you did any damage to them. Asparagus are tough plants. They can live as long as we do. They tend to be very long-lived. They do appreciate mulch. They like composted manure. They really benefit from manure applications to the soil. But hopefully it'll be fine.
I was thinking, Mary, what else we can be doing this time of year? And I'm looking at the forecast. It's calling for 7 below tonight, high of 2 below tomorrow, high of 3 below Monday and the holiday. What else can we do besides looking at seed catalogs? There must be something else. Planning ahead.
Planning ahead is right. You can think about taking classes. You know, there are classes through the Minnesota State Horticulture Society as well as at the Arboretum. Many of these classes are online. There are classes on starting seeds indoors. While it's early, it is a good idea. There's a seeding that you can start in milk bottles in the winter and put those outside, the big plastic milk gallon jugs. And, you know, you can learn a lot of different techniques. You can also do a lot of exploring websites for diversity. You know, one of the things I was reading about recently was tracking and tabulating the diversity of your own home property. How many different plants do you have on your property? And this is something you can do without going outside. It's helpful if you can see all the plants, but if you just try to make a list of how many different kinds of trees do I have on my property, what am I missing? What other kinds of trees am I missing? So increasing diversity on our properties is a really good idea, and looking up and taking classes now. I'd recommend that.
Yeah, great idea. 651-461-9226. We'd love to hear from you. This listener, Mary, said, I put my amaryllis in a dark room middle of October. When should I bring it out? Should I fertilize it right away?
You should definitely bring it out. And it isn't fertilizer that it's going to need so much as it is warmth and water and good light conditions. But yes, you know, it's not a requirement to give amaryllis a dormant period. Many people do, and that's fine, but I would definitely bring it out. It takes 6 or 8 weeks for an amaryllis to bloom once it's started to grow. That's kind of an average conditions, but amaryllis don't need a lot of care, and that's one of the reasons they're such a great plant to give. Basically, the new bulbs are kind of a guaranteed to bloom. The second year and afterwards, it is harder to get them to bloom, but you can do it if you give them a lot of light in the summertime. Basically, put them outside in the summertime.
I know we've had this question before a number of times, Mary. It's about a critter question. They look like fruit flies. I'm not sure what they are, but how do you get rid of them? I wonder if those are, what do you call, fungus gnats?
Yes, fungus gnats are a common, more of a nuisance indoor insect, and they actually live in the soil. They are a little fly, and they have a tiny little maggot or worm-like that's their immature form, and they're in the soil of really, it's basically they feed on organic matter, and sometimes they feed on roots in the soil, but you try to keep your houseplants a little on the dry side, especially on the top. If you let the top dry out, that is helpful. You want to identify these and make sure that is exactly what you've got. You can sometimes see them when you water a pot. You can see them fly around, or they're walking on the soil there. They're usually more of a nuisance than anything else, but we have some good recommendations on how to control them. You can use insecticidal soap on the surface of the soil, but not a lot of it, basically a little bit. And then another remedy is if you take a slice of a potato and put that on the soil, the immature form, the maggot of this, likes to feed on the potato. So then you can trap these immature insects and then throw the potato away. But moisture will help them, so try to keep your top of the soil a little bit drier.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call or two, Mary. Mike, I believe, is calling in from Mankato, Minnesota this morning. Mike, thank you. What's your question for Mary?
Good morning, Mary. I have a question. I have a friend that gave me 4 butternuts, and I was wondering if you give me some tips on how to get them going. Do I put them in pots or just throw them in the ground, or what's a good way to start the butternuts?
So you've got the actual plants, not the seeds.
I got the butternut itself. I got 4 of them. And I have them in a Ziploc bag in the refrigerator in potting soil.
Yes. So if this is a plant, then I would...
Well, it's a butternut tree is what it's like. They call it a white walnut.
Yes. Yes. I know what the plant is. But do you have the little seed itself, or do you have an actual stick? A plant growing.
Yeah, it's in the shell.
Ah, you have the nut itself.
The nut itself, come on.
Yeah, the nut itself in potting soil in your refrigerator. Good. Okay, so that's a dormant treatment that you're giving it, the cold treatment. I would I'd keep it in there until April or so, and then I would put it, I plant it outside in a place where you can watch it. If you want to plant it in a pot, after about 3 months in the refrigerator, you could put it in a pot, but then it's kind of, you gotta deal with that in your house. You can't put that outside. So I'd wait until the spring and either put it in a pot outside or in the ground outside and mark it clearly and then watch it. I'd specifically have to look that up to see about the amount of time it takes for butternuts, but this is a good tree. It's a great tree, native tree that's not grown very much. So yes, I would really try to get those to grow. But if you give them the cold treatment in the refrigerator for a few months and then plant them outside, watch carefully. Hopefully they'll germinate.
Oh, good luck.
Treatment in the refrigerator for a few months and then plant them outside. Watch carefully. Hopefully they'll germinate.
Oh, good luck, Mike. That's great.
Yeah, that's great.
We go from one Mike to another. Mike in Plymouth is on the horn with a question. Mike, what is your question for Mary?
Hi there, Mary. I have a question about, I think they're called burdock, whatever they're like the tall stick plants that have the little spears that have little hooks on them that, you know, when you're walking through them, they get caught on your clothing. I don't know what that plant is called.
Yes, is that right? That's right. It is burdock or stick tight. Okay, so, is another. Yes.
Well, here's my question is there's a bunch of it along the path that I walk in my neighborhood. And I'm wondering if I were to cut all that down now when there's snow on the ground, would that freeze the seeds that are in there so that they would die before next year? Is there anything like cutting them down right now? Would that help at all to kind of reduce them?
Well, cutting them down right now will, if you remove the seeds, then you remove the potential for new plants to be there. But the seed can live through very difficult adverse conditions outside. So unless you remove the seed, those seeds are going to germinate outside. So just cutting them off now when they're brown and look like they're dead, that's just, unless you remove them, that won't make any difference. Burdocks are really difficult to control, and a lot of times they're a biennial, so they have a small basal rosette the first year, leaves on the ground the first year, and then the second year they throw up that seed stalk with all the branches on it and the little round balls, and each ball has 1,000 little stick tight seeds on it. So that is really a really difficult plant to control. But removing the seeds is one thing, and then digging out or removing the basal plants, never letting them flower, is the second thing.
A labor of love.
Big job. Big job. Yep.
Mary, we're going to take a break and look at that chilling forecast, and we'll have more show following. Any kind of a lawn or garden question, let's hear from you at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And good morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Answering those lawn and garden questions today, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. And Mary, we still have a bunch to folks to help out here. 651-461-9226 for either a phone call or a text. I was just thinking, albeit a chilly day, a chilly week, it's still a good time to get to the Arboretum, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and there's still plenty of things happening at the Arboretum. This weekend, today, especially, I think it's actually just today, is the Winter Wellness Fair. So there are a lot of vendors there with food and other products concerning wellness. There's a whole day full of workshops and classes with yoga and other topics. Now, some of the classes are full, but some of the classes are open, and they're all indoors, right? All indoor classes today. So it's a good chance to go to the Arboretum. There's a beautiful gift shop there. There's a cafe where you can have something to eat. There are art displays inside the building, so it is a great place to walk around. The snowshoe trails are minimal, as many places in Minnesota don't have enough snow, but normally it's a great place to walk around outside. And, of course, if you bundle up, you can walk around outside.
Yeah, and again, to get there, and it's really an easy deal with the parking, but you got to reserve online, don't you?
Oh, thanks for reminding that. Yes, everyone needs to get a ticket online. They're timed tickets, and they're open. There's several hundred tickets available every half hour. Very easy to do. Just go on the website, and you can easily set up a time to go to the Arboretum.
Very good. You'll be going back after that first visit, for sure. This is not a question, just a comment. We divided a huge heirloom Christmas cactus in the fall and created four pots, and they are all blooming. As my daughter said, the plant just said thank you and had room to grow and bloom. So there.
Yes, that's wonderful to hear that. Good news.
Mary, this texter says, with coal like this, we are not in zone 5, are we?
Actually, we are. Zone 5 is the new USDA hardiness zone map for the Twin Cities and for a big area, especially the southern part of the state, down along where it meets Iowa. That is now, a lot of that has been reclassified as Zone 5. But yeah, Zone 5, it still gets below zero, but it doesn't go down to 20 below. So that is, you know, 10 below is Zone 5, but 20 below is Zone 4. So unfortunately, yes, we still are going to get cold conditions. But that's a real interesting observation, because a lot of people now will think differently about what they can plant here. But it does have a lot to do with the microclimate and your own specific property. So if you're in the metro area, it's going to be warmer than it is for me in Plymouth, even though now my 55447 zip code is classified as Zone 5. But the Arboretum is still classified as Zone 4.
Oh, it is. So, okay.
Yeah. So on the new USDA plant hardiness zone map, you can put in your zip code, and it will tell you immediately what your zone classification is. And while it is warmer than it used to be, I'm debating, should I plant one of the Japanese maples that has not been hardy for me before? There's some beautiful viburnums that are fragrant that I'd love to plant those and see how they would grow. So you still have to think about this and think about your own property and the exposure that you have as to whether or not things will really change.
There still are variables. So
yes, that's a good way to put it. Still are variables.
Yeah, it's like they say, it depends. Okay.
Yes.
Texter says this, Mary, do green ash borers lay eggs in dead trees? So if I have a dead ash in the woods, will it make more borers, or do I need to take it out?
Well, most of our municipal foresters are encouraging removal of ash trees, especially when they're showing symptoms of the borer. And so once the tree is dead, the question is, it's going to have fewer and fewer borers the longer it's dead, because the borers can't live there. Woodpeckers will come in and they'll take them out. So the good thing is, this is food for woodpeckers. But at some point, it becomes so dead it won't support any more insects. So yeah, it's a question of how old the tree is, how long it's had the borers on it. Some foresters say that the emerald ash borer, the tree can actually have the borer, and it can take up to 5 years for you to really see the damage and the tree to die.
Mm.
So it can be there for a long time, and so that does just perpetuate the number of insects that are out there. That's a tough question, but
yeah.
If you know it's got borer, you probably should remove it.
All right. Let's grab another phone call. We'll move to another zone as we head to Duluth, Minnesota this morning. Bob is on the horn. Bob, thanks for calling. What's your question for Mary?
I have Red Lake currant berry bushes. Are you familiar with those?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I planted them 20 years ago above a retaining wall. And I love the berries, I love the bushes, but now I have to tear down the retaining wall and redo the retaining wall, which means I'll probably either have to transplant them or just go buy some new ones. If they're 20 years old, do you recommend trying to transplant them, or should I just go out and bite the bullet and buy new ones when I redo the wall?
You know, I think the easiest thing is probably going to be to buy new ones. The other thing, how much of the root system you'll be able to actually dig up. When the plants are 20 years old, they're fairly large. It's going to be hard to get enough of the root system. You're going to have to cut back the top. It's just a lot to deal with. So I would say the survival rate is going to be pretty low on older plants like that. The other good thing about buying new ones is all the new currants are resistant to the white pine blister that. The other good thing about buying new ones is all the new currants are resistant to the white pine blister rust. So you won't perpetuate that. That used to be an issue with currants and white pines, but the new ones don't have that now. So you will be assured of not perpetuating that disease. But, you know, you could try it and just see how it goes. How difficult is it and what have you got left? My experience has been the less root system and the less top you have on those big old transplants, the harder it is for them to survive.
All right, Mary, we need to take a break, a quick one. We have more show to come after that break. Right now in the Twin Cities, we're at 5 above. We're heading to 7 below overnight in, here in the Twin Cities. We're only going to get up to about 2 below for a daytime high tomorrow, 3 below for a daytime high Monday. Again, a plus 5 here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good morning here on a Saturday morning. A chilly one, 5 above zero, heading for 7 below overnight tonight. We're in the midst of our lawn and garden show. We call it Smart Garden. Mary Meyer from the U of M answering those particular lawn and garden questions today at 651-461-9226. We still have time for yours. Mary Texter says this. I have a Jamaican lily in a pot which flowered outside last summer. I cut it back and put it into a dark, dry basement. Two questions. Is this just another name for amaryllis? And how soon should I bring it up and water it?
Oh, gosh. Great question. Jamaican lily. I'm going to have to Google that because I don't know what that is.
You're doing that now, in fact.
Yeah, I'm doing that now. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is what happens when you Google Jamaican lily. I have 12 images here. Each one is a different plant. Each one is a totally different genera. Several lilies, but oh my gosh, here we have, I have just gotten, I guess I would say this might be a common name for ginger, alstroemeria, daylily. There's a regular lily coming up here with Jamaica lily on. There's also agapanthus. Gosh. Okay, so let's go back. What was the question this person said?
Again, the Jamaican lily, they want to know if that's just another word for amaryllis, but the main question is how soon should I bring it up and water it?
Yes, I would, if you have this, hopefully it's something like an amaryllis. So I would start to water it now. Another question was, bringing it up, it can take 6 weeks for it to actually flower, but put it in good light conditions. And then once you do have it growing, you can take a picture of it. You could send it in to Ask a Master Gardener, and you can really determine what is that. That can be a common name that refers to many different plants. I'm even seeing here a Jamaican tree lily, which is actually a totally different tree-like plant, a tropical plant. So common names, sometimes very confusing.
Yeah, misleading. Listener says this, Mary, via text. I have 4 raised beds in a vegetable garden. One has strawberries. The other has miniature raspberries. I had to replace the strawberries last season, but found masses of very fine roots in the bed. Pulled them before replacing with the new plants. What to do about them without using poisons?
So I think they're saying what to do about the weeds, those fine roots that they found without using poisons. Well, removing a lot of them, the roots will help a lot and hopefully give your strawberries a good start. The question is here is, what is that weed? What is that plant? So with just the roots, you won't be able to tell. But once you see weeds starting to grow in the springtime, again, you can take pictures of those. The free app is iNaturalist that many people use. It's very good at identifying plants. You can take a picture of the plant. You can send it in to Ask a Master Gardener. Or you can match pictures that are on the website. What weed is this? At the extension.umn.edu website.
All right, very good. Listener wants to know, what type of trees can be trimmed right now, this time of year?
You can do a lot of pruning right now. Most trees can, when they're all the deciduous ones that are dormant, you can do pruning. It's safe to prune oaks now, ash, birch, maple. Any of those can be pruned. You can also start pruning fruit trees. We normally think of doing that towards the end of winter, but apples, all of our fruit trees can be pruned now. So the only thing I would say not to prune are the spring flowering shrubs, magnolias, forsythia, lilacs. If you prune those, you won't hurt the plant. You just take off the flowers because the flower buds are sitting there waiting for spring.
Okay. A listener wants to know, I think it's a good question. I should know this, and I'm sure we could find it by going online. What are the hours of operation at the Arboretum? It's a good question.
Yeah, the hours of operation at the Arboretum. I'll look.
I think we just lost Mary. Well, she went to look. Come back, Mary. Well, while we're waiting for Mary, I just want to remind you that coming along after the CBS News and our local news, we're going to be in the midst of our home improvement show with Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction. So keep in mind those, any kind of a home improvement question. I know we're going to be talking about insulation for sure, given these cold temps. So that's coming along next hour here on CCO. In the meantime, we're in the midst of cold weather. It looks like it's going to be that way for about the next week. In fact, the next 7 days, it looks like not much of a break. I think Mary has left us, unbeknownst to us. So what we'll do is we'll take this break, Dennis, and be back with our home improvement show right after the news and the weather. So stay with us here. Degrees above. Oh, there's Mary.
Did I get cut off? Sorry.
That's okay.
I cut myself off looking at the hours for the Arboretum. Did you hear any of that?
No, I did not. But real fast, when do they close, basically?
It's 8 to 5 for the grounds, 8 to 4 for the buildings.
Oh, good. That's all we need to know. Mary, I'm glad you came back. That's good. I was doing a little tap dancing in the meantime, imparting some other information. But thanks so much, Mary. Always a pleasure. I know we'll talk to you again.
Yes. Thank you, Danny.
Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, get those home improvement questions ready next hour here on 830 WCCO. And good morning, good Saturday morning to you. Welcome to another edition of our Smart Garden Show. Getting a lot of help this morning from Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Denny. Well, I guess we know we're in Minnesota, don't we, with this weather?
Yes, and it seemed like it's, let's face it, we've had it pretty easy up till now. I mean, pretty easy.
Oh, yes. Very easy.
But the door has slammed shut rather loudly. And it's, in fact, we're steadily dropping now. Of course, this time of the morning, we usually do this time of year. 5 above now. We're going to be probably 7 below overnight tonight. And we're only going to get up to like 2 below tomorrow. And a listener sent a text, and I have the same question. I think a lot of people do, too. Given the temperature and so little snow cover, are we going to see a lot of damage, do you think, to our perennials?
Well, we might. I wish we had a bit more snow cover. I thought it was going to happen with this recent snowstorm that went through, but it didn't. You know, it did not. I think a lot of the Twin Cities still doesn't have very much snow cover. Snow is our poor man's mulch, and so we do rely on it to protect and insulate things. It's, snow is a good insulator, and without it, yes, the risk is there. Now, the temperatures, although they are uncomfortable, that's for sure, they're not as bad as they could be. I mean, if it was going to be 20 below air temperatures without any snow cover, then I think we'd see more damage. But as long as we stay above 10 below, I'm hopeful things won't be too bad.
Remember you and I having this discussion a few years ago, and I was thinking about my, not just mine, but other folks calling in, texting in about boxwoods and other, I remember they took a beating a few years ago because of that very thing.
Yes, they did. And boxwood is one of our more marginal broad-leafed evergreens. So planting it on the north side of your house or where it does have some protection from winter sun and the worst of conditions, usually on the south and the west sides of our home. So if you have marginal plants like boxwoods, giving them additional protection like the north side is helpful. But yes, and then last year, the rabbits got into my boxwood.
Really?
Little hedge. Yes, and normally boxwood is pretty offensive to wildlife eating it. It is a strong odor to humans, and we don't usually think of wildlife eating boxwoods, but I think it just provided the perfect habitat. It was a cozy little spot. It was protected. We had enough snow that the rabbits found a way to get in. They could completely hide under the snow. They had a perfect little house down there, and then decided, well, why not just eat what we can reach close by? And they ate a lot of my boxwood, yes.
We always get questions about those critters, too, among others, and no doubt we'll probably have more today. Speaking of which, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, by all means, we'd love to hear from you either by phone or by text. Just one number to remember, 651-461-9226. Call it in, text it in, whichever is easier for you, 651-461-9226. 9226. Another text in this morning, Mary. My Christmas cactus has not bloomed yet this year. It looks pretty healthy, though. What's going on?
Yes, Christmas cactus set their blooms according to the temperature or the day length. So short days, which we do have now if we didn't turn on our lights in our houses, short days will induce flowering, and cool temperatures in the 50s also induce flowering. So you've got to provide those conditions for a month or 6 weeks in order for the buds to set. And if you do that, regardless of the month it is, it can flower year-round if it has those conditions. So if you have a cool room with good light where you can put it and don't turn the lights on, that might be the easiest thing. Now, Julie just did a video that's up on the website on repotting a Christmas cactus. So you can see that at the Extension website, extension.umn.edu. I watched the video, and now I'm trying to remember where's that link. We'll find that. We'll find that link and tell people. But Christmas cactus, the one that she actually repotted, was an old heirloom plant. And it had, the person's mother, their grandmother, their great grandmother had this cactus, and then it was repotted. Julie and one of the staff at the Arboretum did that. The cactus looked terrible. I will just say this, the cactus looked like it was really on its last leg, but it did need repotted. And so I think with that step, it will get better. But Christmas cactus can be very long-lived plants.
That sounds like fun, generation after generation. Speaking of the website, extension.umn.edu, that must be, and I don't have any facts in front of me, But, Mary, that has to be one of the best extension websites. And I know it's very popular. You guys get a lot of hits on that.
Yes, it is. I know there have been years when that was the number one hit or the most used portion of the extension website was the gardening part of it and people looking for information, because not only can you find plant information, you can find insect information. What bug is this? What insect is this? And also, what weed is this? So plant identification in general, it's great. And there are more and more videos, and there's timely information depending on the time of the year. You know, this time of year, you might think, well, what am I gonna look up about gardening? Well, you're going to look up houseplants. If you have a poinsettia in your house, did you get an amaryllis? How are you going to take care of those plants? Seed catalogs are starting to come in your house. Did you get an amaryllis? How are you going to take care of those plants? Seed catalogs are starting to come in the mail. So you're planting your vegetables. You're thinking about what vegetables have done well in Minnesota. So the Master Gardener Program has lots of information on that. So it's a local resource for Minnesotans to really hone in on what will grow best and do best in our rigorous climate.
What I've used it for, Mary, among other things, is if I was interested in planting a tree, which we all should be interested in, it's got some great pictures and ideas. It's a great resource for finding a tree to plant.
Yes, it is. And unfortunately, lots of us are losing trees because of, excuse me, the emerald ash borer. And if you've got any ash on your property, yes, you have to think about what replacement trees should I put in? What tree can I put in now so that it will grow by the time you have to take out your ash? It's unfortunate, but I think a lot of people will lose their ash trees. We might find some that are resistant, as we did with the elm trees. And we still have a lot of elms around, and we have great elms for replacements now. But diversity is good, and yes, the website extension.umn.edu has lots of information on plant selection.
Mary, I was wondering if we were going to get any questions about dormant seeding grass seed. And this Dexter said, can I still throw down grass seed to mix with the snow? Is that a good idea?
You know, it's really taking a risk. The idea is that you get the seed in contact with the soil. And then if it snows, the snow just helps to keep it in place. But if you do this reverse, you've got the snow first and then you've got the seed, it's a big risk. It's essentially throwing caution, you know, to the wind. So I would not recommend it unless you can see quite a bit of soil there. Dormant seeding is a good idea. I did it just on the property in between my house and the neighbors this year. It is a good idea, but if you can't get contact with the soil, it's a big risk.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Mary, we're taking a quick break here, inviting our listeners to join in. Any lawn or garden question, we'd love to hear from you at 651-461-9226. You can phone it in or you can text it in. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO, it's 5 above zero. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, inviting listeners' texts or calls, lawn or garden type, for this morning, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, 651-461-9226. Backing up a little bit, Mary, Julie, I know Julie's video you were mentioning to me off air on that Christmas cactus, that was on Channel 11, Care 11, wasn't it?
Right. And the Arboretum person she worked with was Ricky Garza. So you saw Ricky actually repot that cactus. So, yes, you're right. It's not going to be on the website. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah, Care 11. You can check it out with those good folks.
Right.
Again, our phone number happens to also be our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, I planted asparagus and this previous summer, I read where I should cut back the leafy fronds when they turn brown and then place mulch on them. With the warm weather, they never turn brown. I did cut them off when they were green and then did put on mulch. Will I have lost the asparagus by having cut them back too early, is the question.
I think it depends on when you cut them back. Actually, you don't have to worry about cutting them back. And if you cut them back when they're brown, that's okay. But they will die naturally. The tops will die naturally. As long as they're green, they're producing carbohydrates and food for the plants. So cutting them off when they're green could have damaged them, but hopefully not. If it was the end of the year, like October, September, something like that, I doubt if you did any damage to them. Asparagus are tough plants. They can live as long as we do. They tend to be very long-lived. They do appreciate mulch. They like composted manure. They really benefit from manure applications to the soil. But hopefully it'll be fine.
I was thinking, Mary, what else we can be doing this time of year? And I'm looking at the forecast. It's calling for 7 below tonight, high of 2 below tomorrow, high of 3 below Monday and the holiday. What else can we do besides looking at seed catalogs? There must be something else. Planning, well, planning ahead.
Planning ahead is right. You can think about taking classes. You know, there are classes through the Minnesota State Horticulture Society as well as at the Arboretum. Many of these classes are online. There are classes on starting seeds indoors. While it's early, it is a good idea. There's a seeding that you can start in milk bottles in the winter and put those outside, the big plastic milk gallon jugs. And you know, you can learn a lot of different techniques. You can also do a lot of exploring websites for diversity. You know, one of the things I was reading about recently was tracking and tabulating the diversity of your own home property. How many different plants do you have on your property? And this is something you can do without going outside. It's helpful if you can see all the plants, but if you just try to make a list of how many different kinds of trees do I have on my property, what am I missing? What other kinds of trees am I missing? So increasing diversity on our properties is a really good idea, and looking up and taking classes now, I'd recommend that.
Yeah, great idea. 651-461-9226. We'd love to hear from you. This listener, Mary, said, I put my amaryllis in a dark room middle of October. When should I bring it out? Should I fertilize it right away?
You should definitely bring it out. And it isn't fertilizer that it's going to need so much as it is warmth and water and good light conditions. But yes, you know, it's not a requirement to give amaryllis a dormant period. Many people do, and that's fine, but I would definitely bring it out. It takes 6 or 8 weeks for an amaryllis to bloom once it's started to grow. That's kind of an average conditions, but amaryllis don't need a lot of care, and that's one of the reasons they're such a great plant to give. Basically, the new bulbs are kind of a guaranteed to bloom. The second year and afterwards, it is harder to get them to bloom, but you can do it if you give them a lot of light in the summertime. Basically, put them outside in the summertime.
I know we've had this question before a number of times, Mary. It's about a critter question. They look like fruit flies. I'm not sure what they are, but how do you get rid of them? I wonder if those are, what do you call, fungus gnats?
Yes, fungus gnats are a common, more of a nuisance indoor insect, and they actually live in the soil. They are a little fly, and they have a tiny little maggot or worm-like that's their immature form, and they're in the soil of really, it's basically they feed on organic matter, and sometimes they feed on roots in the soil, but you try to keep your houseplants a little on the dry side, especially on the top. If you let the top dry out, that is helpful. you want to identify these and make sure that is exactly what you've got. You can sometimes see them when you water a pot. You can see them fly around, or they're walking on the soil there. They're usually more of a nuisance than anything else, but we have some good recommendations on how to control them. You can use insecticidal soap on the surface of the soil, but not a lot of it, basically a little bit. And then another remedy is if you take a slice of a potato and put that on the soil, the immature form, the maggot of this, likes to feed on the potato. So then you can trap these immature insects and then throw the potato away. But moisture will help them. So try to keep your top of the soil a little bit drier.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call or two, Mary. Mike, I believe, is calling in from Mankato, Minnesota this morning. Mike, thank you. What's your question for Mary?
Good morning, Mary. I have a question. I have a friend that gave me 4 butternuts, and I was wondering if you'd give me some tips on how to get them going. Do I put them in pots or just throw them in the ground, or what's a good way to start the butternuts?
So you've got the actual plants, not the seeds.
I got the butternut itself. I got 4 of them. And I have them in a Ziploc bag in the refrigerator in potting soil.
Yes. So if this is a plant, then I would...
Well, it's a butternut tree is what it's like. They call it a white walnut.
Yes. Yes, I know what the plant is. But do you have the little seed itself, or do you have an actual stick, a plant growing?
Yeah, it's in the shell.
Ah, you have the nut itself.
The nut itself. Come on.
Yeah, the nut itself in potting soil in your refrigerator. Good. Okay, so that's a dormant treatment that you're giving it, the cold treatment. I would I'd keep it in there until. April or so, and then I would put it, I'd plant it outside in a place where you can watch it. If you want to plant it in a pot, after about 3 months in the refrigerator, you could put it in a pot, but then it's kind of, you gotta deal with that in your house. You can't put that outside. So I'd wait until the spring and either put it in a pot outside or in the ground outside and mark it clearly and then watch it. I'd specifically have to look that up to see about the amount of time it takes for butternuts, but this is a good tree. It's a great tree, native tree that's not grown very much. So yes, I would really try to get those to grow. But if you give them the cold treatment in the refrigerator for a few months and then plant them outside, watch carefully. Hopefully they'll germinate.
Oh, good luck.
Treatment in the refrigerator for a few months and then plant them outside. Watch carefully. Hopefully they'll germinate.
Oh, good luck, Mike. That's great.
Yeah, that's great.
We go from one Mike to another. Mike in Plymouth is on the horn with a question. Mike, what is your question for Mary?
Hi there, Mary. I have a question about, I think they're called burdock, whatever the they're like the tall stick plants that have the little spheres that have little hooks on them that, you know, when you're walking through them, they get caught on your clothing. I don't know what that plant is called.
Yes, is that right? That's right. It is burdock or stick tight. Okay, so, is another, yes.
Well, here's my question is, there's a bunch of it along the path that I walk in my neighborhood. And I'm wondering if I were to cut all that down now when there's snow on the ground, would that freeze the seeds that are in there so that they would die before next year? Is there anything like cutting them down right now? Would that help at all to kind of reduce them?
Well, cutting them down right now will, if you remove the seeds, then you remove the potential for new plants to be there. But the seed can live through very difficult adverse conditions outside. So unless you remove the seed, those seeds are going to germinate outside. So just cutting them off now when they're brown and look like they're dead, that's just, unless you remove them, that won't make any difference. Burdocks are really difficult to control, and a lot of times they're a biennial, so they have a small basal rosette the first year, leaves on the ground the first year, and then the second year they throw up that seed stalk with all the branches on it and the little round balls, and each ball has 1,000 little stick-tight seeds on it. So that is really a really difficult plant to control. But removing the seeds is one thing, and then digging out or removing the basal plants, never letting them flower, is the second thing.
A labor of love.
Big job. Big job. Yep.
Mary, we're going to take a break and look at that chilling forecast, and we'll have more show following. Any kind of a lawn or garden question, let's hear from you at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WCCO. And good morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Answering those lawn and garden questions today, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. And Mary, we still have a bunch to folks to help out here. 651-461-9226 for either a phone call or a text. I was just thinking, albeit a chilly day, a chilly week, it's still a good time to get to the Arboretum, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and there's still plenty of things happening at the Arboretum. This weekend, today, especially, I think it's actually just today, is a winter wellness fair. So there are a lot of vendors there with food and other products concerning wellness. There's a whole day full of workshops and classes with yoga and other topics. Now, some of the classes are full, but some of the classes are open, and they're all indoors, right? All indoor classes today. So it's a good chance to go to the Arboretum. There's a beautiful gift shop there. There's a cafe where you can have something to eat. There are art displays inside the building, so it is a great place to walk around. The snowshoe trails are minimal, as many places in Minnesota don't have enough snow, but normally it's a great place to walk around outside. And, of course, if you bundle up, you can walk around outside.
Yeah, and again, to get there, and it's really an easy deal with the parking, but you got to reserve online, don't you?
Oh, thanks for reminding that. Yes, everyone needs to get a ticket online. They're timed tickets, and they're open. There's several hundred tickets available every half hour. Very easy to do. Just go on the website, and you can easily set up a time to go to the Arboretum.
Very good. You'll be going back after that first visit, for sure. This is not a question, just a comment. We divided a huge heirloom Christmas cactus in the fall and created four pots, and they are all blooming. As my daughter said, the plant just said thank you and had room to grow and bloom. So there.
Yes, that's wonderful to hear that. Good news.
Mary, this texter says, with cold like this, we are not in zone 5, are we?
Actually, we are. Zone 5 is the new USDA hardiness zone map for the Twin Cities and for a big area, especially the southern part of the state, down along where it meets Iowa. That is now, a lot of that has been reclassified as Zone 5. But Zone 5, it still gets below zero, but it doesn't go down to 20 below. So that is, 10 below is Zone 5, but 20 below is Zone 4. So unfortunately, yes, we still are going to get cold conditions. But that's a real interesting observation, because a lot of people now will think differently about what they can plant here. But it does have a lot to do with the microclimate and your own specific property. So if you're in the metro area, it's going to be warmer than it is for me in Plymouth, even though now my 55447 zip code is classified as zone 5. But the Arboretum is still classified as zone 4.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. So on the new USDA plant hardiness zone map, you can put in your zip code, and it will tell you immediately what your zone classification is. And while it is warmer than it used to be, I'm debating, should I plant one of the Japanese maples that has not been hardy for me before? There's some beautiful viburnums that are fragrant that I'd love to plant those and see how they would grow. So you still have to think about this and think about your own property and the exposure that you have as to whether or not things will really change.
There still are variables. So
yes, that's a good way to put it. Still are variables.
It's like they say, it depends. Okay.
Yes.
Texter says this, Mary, do green ash borers lay eggs in dead trees? So if I have a dead ash in the woods, will it make more borers, or do I need to take it out?
Well, most of our municipal foresters are encouraging removal of ash trees, especially when they're showing symptoms of the borer. And so once the tree is dead, the question is, it's going to have fewer and fewer borers the longer it's dead, because the borers can't live there. Woodpeckers will come in and they'll take them out. So the good thing is, this is food for woodpeckers. But at some point, it becomes so dead it won't support any more insects. Yeah, it's a question of how old the tree is, how long it's had the borers on it. Some foresters say that the emerald ash borer, the tree can actually have the borer, and it can take up to 5 years for you to really see the damage and the tree to die.
Mm.
So it can be there for a long time, and so that does just perpetuate the number of insects that are out there. That's a tough question, but
yeah.
If you know it's got borer, you probably should remove it.
All right. Let's grab another phone call. We'll move to another zone as we head to Duluth, Minnesota this morning. Bob is on the horn. Bob, thanks for calling. What's your question for Mary?
I have Red Lake currant berry bushes. Are you familiar with those?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So I planted them 20 years ago above a retaining wall. And I love the berries. I love the bushes. But now I have to tear down the retaining wall and redo the retaining wall, which means I'll probably either have to transplant them or just go buy some new ones. If they're 20 years old, do you recommend trying to transplant them? Or should I just go out and bite the bullet and buy new ones when I redo the wall?
You know, I think the easiest thing is probably going to be to buy new ones. The other thing, how much of the root system you'll be able to actually dig up when the plants are 20 years old, they're fairly large. It's going to be hard to get enough of the root system. You're going to have to cut back the top. It's just a lot to deal with. So I would say the survival rate is going to be pretty low on older plants like that. The other good thing about buying new ones is all the new currants are resistant to the white pine blister. So you won't perpetuate that. That used to be an issue with currants and white pines, but the new ones don't have that now. So you will be assured of not perpetuating that disease. But, you know, you could try it and just see how it goes. How difficult is it, and what have you got left? My experience has been the less root system and the less top you have on those big old transplants, the harder it is for them to survive.
All right, Mary, we need to take a break, a quick one. We have more show to come after that break. Right now in the Twin Cities, we're at 5 above. We're heading to 7 below overnight in here in the Twin Cities. We're only going to get up to about 2 below for a daytime high tomorrow, 3 below for a daytime high Monday. Again, a plus 5 here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And good morning here on a Saturday morning. A chilly one, 5 above zero, heading for 7 below overnight tonight. We're in the midst of our lawn and garden show. We call it Smart Garden. Mary Meyer from the U of M answering those particular lawn and garden questions today at 651-461-9226. We still have time for yours. Mary Texter says this. I have a Jamaican lily in a pot which flowered outside last summer. I cut it back and put it into a dark, dry basement. Two questions. Is this just another name for amaryllis? And how soon should I bring it up and water it?
Oh, gosh. Great question. Jamaican lily. I'm going to have to Google that because I don't know what that is.
You're doing that now, in fact.
Yeah, I'm doing that now. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is what happens when you Google Jamaican lily. I have 12 images here. Each one is a different plant. Each one is a totally different genera. Several lilies, but oh my gosh, here we have, I have just gotten, I guess I would say this might be a common name for ginger, alstroemeria, day lily. There's a regular lily coming up here with Jamaica lily on. There's also agapanthus. Gosh. Okay, so let's go back. What was the question this person said?
Again, the Jamaican lily. They want to know if that's just another word for amaryllis. But the main question is, how soon should I bring it up and water it?
Yes, I would. If you have this, hopefully maybe it's something like an amaryllis. So I would start to water it now. Another question was, bringing it up, it can take 6 weeks for it to actually flower, but put it in good light conditions. And then once you do have it growing, you can take a picture of it. You could send it in to Ask a Master Gardener, and you can really determine what is that. That can be a common name that refers to many different plants. I'm even seeing here a Jamaican tree lily, which is actually a totally different tree-like plant, a tropical plant. So common names, sometimes very confusing.
Yeah, misleading. Listener says this, Mary, via text. I have 4 raised beds in a vegetable garden. One has strawberries. The other has miniature raspberries. I had to replace the strawberries last season, but found masses of very fine roots in the bed. Pull them before replacing with the new plants. What to do about them without using poisons?
So I think they're saying what to do about the weeds, those fine roots that they found without using poisons. Well, removing a lot of them, the roots will help a lot and hopefully give your strawberries a good start. The question is here is, what is that weed? What is that plant? So with just the roots, you won't be able to tell. But once you see weeds starting to grow in the springtime, again, you can take pictures of those. The free app is iNaturalist that many people use. It's very good at identifying plants. You can take a picture of the plant. You can send it in to Ask a Master Gardener. Or you can match pictures that are on the website. What weed is this? At the extension.umn.edu website.
All right, very good. Listener wants to know, what type of trees can be trimmed right now, this time of year?
You can do a lot of pruning right now. Most trees can, when they're all the deciduous ones that are dormant, you can do pruning. It's safe to prune oaks now, ash, birch, maple, Any of those can be pruned. You can also start pruning fruit trees. We normally think of doing that towards the end of winter, but apples, all of our fruit trees can be pruned now. So the only thing I would say not to prune are the spring flowering shrubs, magnolias, forsythia, lilacs. If you prune those, you won't hurt the plant. You just take off the flowers because the flower buds are sitting there waiting for spring.
Okay. A listener wants to know, I think it's a good question. I should know this, and I'm sure we could find it by going online. What are the hours of operation at the Arboretum? It's a good question.
Yeah, the hours of operation at the Arboretum. I'll look.
I think we just lost Mary. Well, she went to look. Come back, Mary. Well, while we're waiting for Mary, I just want to remind you that coming along after the CBS News and our local news, we're going to be in the midst of our home improvement show with Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction. So keep in mind those, any kind of a home improvement question. I know we're going to be talking about insulation for sure, given these cold temps. So that's coming along next hour here on CCO. In the meantime, we're in the midst of cold weather. It looks like it's going to be that way for about the next week. In fact, the next 7 days, it looks like not much of a break. I think Mary has left us, unbeknownst to us. So what we'll do is we'll take this break, Dennis, and be back with our home improvement show right after the news and the weather. So stay with us here. Degrees above. Oh, there's Mary.
Did I get cut off? Sorry.
That's okay.
I cut myself off looking at the hours for the Arboretum. Did you hear any of that?
No, I did not. But real fast, when do they close, basically?
it's 8 to 5 for the grounds, 8 to 4 for the buildings.
Oh, good. That's all we need to know. Mary, I'm glad you came back. That's good. I was doing a little tap dancing in the meantime, imparting some other information. But thanks so much, Mary. Always a pleasure. I know we'll talk to you again.
Yes, thank you, Danny.
Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Yeah, get those home improvement questions ready next hour here on 830 WCCO.